You know, there's a phrase I think we're all guilty of using when something is incredibly boring. We say it's like watching grass grow.
Right, or watching paint dry, the ultimate waste of time.
Exactly. But today, we're looking at a stack of research that suggests the future of global energy might actually depend on watching something even slower. We're watching steel grains grow. And unlike grass or paint, if this grows the wrong way, we have a billion-dollar problem.
A very high-stakes problem. We're diving into a master's thesis from the University of Cambridge by Ailsa A. Keeley, and it's titled Characterization and Interpretation of Austenite Grain Growth Kinetics in an Advanced Nuclear Pressure Vessel Steel.
Which is a mouthful.
It is. But if you strip away the academic titling, this is really a detective story. It's about a murder mystery, essentially, where the victim is the structural integrity of our next generation of nuclear reactors.
And the suspect is a tiny missing particle.
Pers
So here's our mission for this deep dive. The world is hungry for power. The source material highlights that global electricity demand is what? Hypothesized to double to 30,000 terawatt hours by 2030.
It's a huge number, and we need low carbon baseload power. We need nuclear. But we can't just keep building the old 1970s reactors. We need Generation the Four.
Right. Reactors that are more efficient, safer, and crucially, last longer.
But we've hit a wall, or rather a steel barrier. And to get there, we have to solve a material science paradox that this thesis just brilliantly exposes.
So let's start with the invisible giant. We often picture nuclear plants as these huge concrete domes, but the real workhorse is hidden inside.
The reactor pressure vessel, the RPV.
Describe this beast for us, because the scale is just hard to grasp.
It's the absolute heart of the plant. It holds the nuclear core, the fuel, the coolant. In a typical pressurized water reactor, you're looking at a steel cylinder about 5 meters wide, 12 meters high,
Okay.
weighing roughly 530 tons.
530 tons, that's a lot of steel.
And it's not just sitting there, it's holding back 15 megapascals of pressure at 300 degrees Celsius. Just imagine balancing a small car on your thumbnail. That is the pressure this steel endures every second for decades.
And the sources call this the life-limiting component, which I assume means.
It means it's the one part of the nuclear plant you cannot swap out.
Ever.
Never. You can replace a pump, you can replace a steam generator, you cannot replace the pressure vessel. It's entombed in concrete and piping. If the RPV fails, or even if it just gets too brittle to be legally safe, the plant shuts down.
Game over.
Game over.
So if we want these next-gen plants to last 60 years instead of the standard 40, this steel has to be, well, invincible.
And that's the problem. The current industry standard of steel, called SA508 Grade 3, is good. It's the reliable workhorse we've used for years, but it has an Achilles heel.
The radiation embrittlement.
Exactly. When you bombard steel with neutrons from a nuclear reaction for 40, 50, 60 years, it changes the metal. It makes it brittle. It's like an old rubber band. Eventually, it just snaps instead of stretching.
And grade three struggles to get to that 60-year finish line.
It really does. At least not without major safety concerns.
So, enter the Challenger. The thesis focuses on a new alloy, SA508 Grade 4N.
The super steel, if you will.
And on paper, this stuff looks like the answer. The thesis notes it has higher nickel and chromium content, but lower manganese. Why does that specific cocktail matter?
It's all about toughness and radiation resistance. The nickel boosts the initial toughness, so how much punishment it can take before cracking, and lowering the manganese helps reduce that embrittlement over time.
So chemically, it's designed to survive the 60-year marathon.
It is.
Great. So we have a winner. We just switch the specs, build a reactor, solve the energy crisis.
You would think, but material science is rarely that kind. It's a game of trade-offs. You fix one thing, you often break another. Keeley's thesis is investigating how the steel behaves in the reactor.
No.
She's investigating how it behaves when we try to build the reactor.
And this is where we have to zoom way in. We're going down to the microscopic level. I think most people, myself included, tend to think of steel as just a solid, uniform block of gray matter. But it's not, is it?
No, not at all. If you polish it and look under a microscope, steel is a mosaic. It's made of millions of tiny crystals called grains.
And the size of these grains dictates the personality of the metal.
Completely. There's a fundamental rule in metallurgy called the Hall-Petch relationship. The thesis quotes the math, but the concept is actually pretty intuitive. Smaller grains mean stronger, tougher metal.
Because there are more boundaries.
Exactly. Think of a crack trying to run through the metal. If the grains are huge, that crack can run a long, long distance without being stopped.
Right.
But if the grains are tiny, The crack hits a wall, a grain boundary, every few microns. It has to change direction, use up energy. It can stop the crack dead.
So for a nuclear reactor, we want a mosaic of tiny, tight tiles, not big, loose flagstones.
Mm.
Correct. We want a fine grain structure. But here's the catch. To build a 530-ton pressure vessel, you have to forge it. You have to take these massive ingots of red-hot steel, punch holes in them, roll them, weld them. You are heating this stuff to massive temperatures.
And when steel gets hot,
it transforms. Between about 840 and 895 degrees Celsius, it enters a phase called austenite. And in this phase, grains aren't static. They're hungry. They want to grow.
Why? What's driving them to get bigger?
Thermodynamics. Nature hates high energy states. A lot of small grains have a lot of surface area, all those boundaries. That's high energy. If they merge into one giant grain, they reduce that surface area. They sort of relax.
So whenever you heat the steel, the grains naturally try to balloon out.
They do.
Which is exactly what we don't want. We need to heat it to shape it,
sure.
But we need to stop it from relaxing into these giant, brittle grains.
That is the tension. And that sets the stage for Keeley's experiment. The hypothesis was simple. We know the old steel, grade 3, handles this heat well, but how does the new super steel, grade 4N, handle the heat of manufacturing?
Let's talk about how she tested this, because she didn't just toss a block of steel in a furnace. She used something called dilatometry and thermal etching.
It's a very clever setup. They took small, highly polished samples of the grade 4N steel, put them in a vacuum so they wouldn't rust or oxidize, and then heated them up.
And the etching part, how does that work?
This is a cool visual part. Usually to see grains, you have to cut the metal, polish it, use acid. But here, they use the heat itself. At those high temperatures, surface tension creates these tiny, tiny grooves where the grain boundaries hit the surface.
So the heat literally draws a map of the microstructure right on the surface of the sample.
Exactly. So they could heat these samples to 840, 880, all the way up to 990 degrees Celsius, hold them for anywhere from 30 minutes to 10 hours.
Wow.
And then analyze exactly how much the grains had grown. They were basically simulating the entire manufacturing process.
Right. And then they just compared those maps against the data we already have for the old reliable grade 3.
They did. And this is where the detective story reveals the culprit. Let's start with the control group. Why is the old grade 3 steel so good at staying fine-grained? If nature wants the grains to grow, why don't they?
It must have some trick.
It has breaks.
Breaks.
It's a phenomenon called zener pinning. Imagine you have a balloon trying to expand. That's your grain. Now imagine you cover that balloon in a net made of tiny, rigid knots. The balloon can't push past them.
And what are the knots in the steel?
Aluminum nitride particles. Tiny microscopic precipitates that form and just sit on the grain boundaries. In grade 3 steel, these particles physically pin the boundaries in place. They say, nope, you're staying small.
Even at like 900 degrees?
Yes. In grade 3, those breaks hold firm until about 940 degrees. Only then do the particles dissolve and the grains can finally explode in size.
That gives manufacturers a huge safety buffer. You can forge it, heat treat it, and as long as you stay under 940, you're safe.
Precisely. It's a very forgiving material.
Okay, so that's the old guard. Now, Keeley looks at the new challenger, grade 4N. The one that's chemically designed to be superior. What happened when she turned up the heat?
The breaks were missing.
Completely.
Almost entirely. The data in the thesis is just, it's stark. In grade 4N, the grains started growing immediately. Even at the lowest test temperature, 840 degrees, the grains were already taking off.
How much bigger are we talking? Is it a measurable difference? Or?
Oh, a massive difference. At the lower temperatures, the grains in the new steel were anywhere from double to seven times larger than the grains in the old steel treated for the exact same amount of time.
Seven times larger. That's not a margin of error. That is a completely different material structure.
It is, and the thesis digs into the chemistry to explain why. Remember, grade 4N has that high nickel and chromium.
Right, for the radiation resistance.
Well, to make the steel clean and tough, and to accommodate that nickel, the specification for grade 4N demands much lower aluminum and nitrogen.
Ah, the ingredients for the breaks.
The key ingredients. Keeley ran thermodynamic calculations using a system called MT-Data and found that in grade 4N, those aluminum nitride precipitates just. They aren't there. They don't form.
So in our quest to make the steel purer and chemically stronger, we accidentally removed the doorstops.
We removed the very thing that kept the structure stable during construction.
Mm.
And it gets worse. The growth wasn't just fast. The source describes it as abnormal and bimodal.
Bimodal. That sounds unstable.
It means you don't just get big grains. You get a chaotic mix. A cluster of small grains here, and then suddenly a massive giant grain right next to them.
Like baiting a wall out of bricks and boulders just randomly thrown together.
Exactly. Structurally, that is a nightmare. It creates stress concentrations. It makes it incredibly hard to predict how and when the material might fail. Consistency is the golden rule of engineering, and heated grade 4N is inconsistently consistent.
This feels like a major oversight in the design of this material. Or is it just a trade-off we didn't see coming?
It's the absolute definition of a trade-off. Mm-hmm. But the implications for the engineers building these Gen-4F reactors are serious. If you're listening to this and you work in nuclear fabrication, this thesis is effectively a giant warning sign.
Because you can't treat the new steel like the old steel.
You absolutely cannot. Think about welding. When you weld sections of a vessel together, you create what's called a heat-affected zone right next to the weld. That metal gets incredibly hot.
And if it's grade 4N?
Then right next to your weld, you're risking this massive, unpinned grain growth. You are potentially baking a weak spot, a region of lower toughness, right into the wall of your reactor before you even turn it on.
So does this mean grade 4N is a bust? Do we scrap it and start over?
No, I don't think so. We still need that radiation resistance. The chemical argument for grade 4N is still completely valid. But Keeley's work suggests we have to rethink how we handle it.
The manufacturing manual needs a total rewrite.
A complete rewrite. The thesis suggests that the old mathematical models, the activation energy models we use to predict how steel behaves, they don't fit grade 4N at all. If you use the old math, you'll predict small grains and you'll get giant ones.
So we need, what, tighter temperature controls?
Much tighter controls, maybe different welding techniques. We might need new post-weld heat treatments designed specifically to refine those grains back down, if that's even possible, without the pinning particles. It makes the whole manufacturing process much tighter, much more expensive, and far less forgiving.
It's fascinating. We usually think of technological progress as this straight line. You invent the better thing, you use the better thing. But here, the better thing is actually much, much harder to use properly.
That is the reality of material science. There is no such thing as a perfect material. We gained chemical longevity for that 60-year lifespan, but we paid for it with thermal instability during manufacturing.
And it all comes down to those tiny particles, just parts per million of aluminum and nitrogen.
It really highlights the fragility of these massive systems. You change the recipe by a fraction of a percent, you remove a microscopic break, and suddenly the safety of a 530-ton vessel is in question.
So to wrap this up, we have a detective story that ends with a clear warning. We found the invisible giant, the reactor vessel. We found the super steel grade 4N. But thanks to this thesis, we also found the missing evidence. The lack of aluminum nitride means this new steel is a wild stallion that refuses to be tamed by the old methods.
It's a call for precision. We can use this material, but we have to respect it. We can't just assume it plays by the old rules.
I want to leave you with a thought that really struck me while reading this. We rely on these massive structures, bridges, skyscrapers, nuclear reactors, to be solid and permanent. But their stability often hangs on these microscopic details we can't even see.
It's true. It's all happening at the nanoscale.
If the safety of $1 billion 60-year energy project depends on the presence of these tiny, almost accidental doorstops that we removed in the name of progress, what else are we missing?
That is the question that keeps safety inspectors up at night.
In our rush to make things advanced and pure, are we remembering to check the microscopic breaks?
Always check the breaks.
Good advice for steel and for life. Thanks for diving deep with us into the hidden worlds of nuclear metallurgy.
See you next time.